This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Need. See you Saturday, December 20th at the Antacid Test. It's a dead air production, so what could go wrong? You really want a second opinion? Then take it from these guys.
We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas and a happy Bob Weir.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of the New Capital Show. Pleasure to be with you. I'm Leo Gold, your host. It is 10:01 in Houston, Texas. Snowy Houston, Texas. Wasn't that fantastic? That was great. It snowed last night in Houston, Texas. And my little ones, my little kids and I opened up the big picture window in front of the house, turned around the rocking chair, and we sat there and watched the snow fall down. And they got quiet. They didn't make a sound. They sat there and watched the snow. Actually, my daughter wanted to know why the snow is white. Why is the snow white? I don't know. I said, I don't know. I didn't have an answer. 713-526-5738. Why is the snow white? Physics. Something about physics. So I feel great. It was great. I went out and took a walk. And so the idea is, we need to be thankful for very small things. Although snow in Houston's not a small thing. And coming on December 10th, it doesn't happen very often. Things are possible. Things are possible. Things are probable if you wait long enough. If you wait long enough, things will happen. I think we've waited long enough in this country for things to happen, and I think they're happening. Slowly, maybe a bit painfully, but they are happening. And every day things happen. Every day things change. Sometimes for the worse, but oftentimes for the better. And I hope that's what's happening with you right now in your life. I really do. I hope that the next year is going to be a great year for you as we wind down 2008. Hard to imagine that it's coming to a close. It's been a very, very exciting year. I want to thank everybody right now, just in case I forget who works on our show. Bob Wilkerson, Laura Slavin, who slaves every week. Stephen Reitman, who does such a great job on our website, Teb Loki and Michael Mendenhall, who also lend their invaluable assistance. Thanks to all of you for the work that you do on New Capital Show. It's much appreciated. www.newcapitalshow.com is our website. You can pick up old shows, sign on to our mailing list. You do that over on the right-hand side. Leave comments, whatever you feel like doing. newcapitalshow.com. Going to get to a few news items, and then perhaps later in the show, I'd like to devote a bit of time to personal financial issues, perhaps your personal financial issues. I think I do this every so often. I think I did it at the end of last year. There's no reason that listeners to Pacific and Public Radio should not have access to information, just as listeners to other radio stations do. And so this is an interesting year, and we're going to open up the phones for you to ask any sort of question. I can't guarantee you that I'll have an answer, but hopefully to help orient you as to what things you might be thinking about for your own personal financial issues. 713-526-5738. Here's a news item, if I can find it. Here it is. Obama team set on the environment. Barack Obama is apparently going to appoint a handful of people to head up energy environmental offices. And, of course, these are incredibly, incredibly important positions. As we've seen in the last 8 years under George Bush, the appointment of the wrong person can have devastating consequences for huge, huge swaths of the environment. The Bush administration, at the very beginning of George Bush's tenure, appointed industry lobbyists. Which industry? The coal industry. Appointed industry lobbyists from the coal industry to head things, to head departments at the Environmental Protection, the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, and other agencies, the Department of the Interior, Bureau of Land Management. And the consequences have been devastating, as laws and regulations have either been not enforced, and in other cases have been outright gutted. The report out of Washington is that President-elect Obama has selected his top energy and environmental advisors. This includes a Nobel Prize-winning physicist and the former head of the EPA, Carol Browner, who was head of EPA under Bill Clinton, and I think by all accounts is someone who at least has a strong amount of care for what happens to our environment, as opposed to those who served in the EPA under George Bush. Collectively, they will have the task of carrying out Mr. Obama's stated intent to curb global warming emissions drastically while fashioning a more efficient national energy system. And they will be able to work with strong allies in Congress who are interested also in these issues. You know, what we're seeing in this financial crisis, and as I've said several times, to me it's not just a financial crisis. It should be a wider crisis. In many ways, it's not just our banks that are telling us things have happened that are not good and not right. It's other parts of our system as well that are telling us things have not happened that are not good and not right. Structuring of our businesses, investment in our systems of education, in transportation, and the way that we protect our environment. We, the listeners of Pacifica, listeners of New Capital Show, listeners of KPFT, we know the way to get the economy moving again. We know where investment can be made. We know that in order to make investment, you have to be able to accurately calculate return on investment. And so you have to be able to calculate the inputs in a project and what a project is going to output. And you have to be able to do it rigorously. You can't just say, oh, well, because there's no money going into this thing, there are huge costs in the form of pollution and other externalities that are not priced out, that we can just ignore those things. That we could ignore the huge cost of social dislocations that are caused from our projects. No, we have to take into account all of these things, because they all are going to have an effect as to whether there's a return on a project. We understand intuitively that living in the right size houses, not too little but not too big, that's the right way to go. Because that frees up and makes capital available for other projects. If all the capital goes into houses, if everyone lives in a 5,000 square foot house, but uses only 2,000 square feet of it, that's 3,000 square feet of wasted space. And all the capital that went in to building that 5,000 square foot house, 60% of it is wasted, locked up and tied up in something that will never be used. In the meantime, we starve other projects. Schools. We know our schools are overcrowded, that they don't have the right amount of technology. My gosh, our children have to hold bake sales to be able to meet budgets to purchase things that are needed. This is not right. It's not right. Our energy systems should be right. By the way, I've got something that outrages me. Anybody heard of Green Mountain Energy? Bob, you use them? No. Laura? I used them for a long time. I'm just going to tell my story. You sign up for these yearly contracts, right? You sign a year-long contract with a power company. And they lock you in, they give you a price. You get a fixed price. Okay, you're going to pay 15 cents a kilowatt hour. And then the contract expires. And you're not paying attention, right? You got other stuff going on. And what happens when the contract expires? They double the price of the electricity. And you go what they call month to month. Well, this happened to me. And then I didn't even notice it. And I called Green Mountain Power. I'm using all wind energy, all renewable power. I called them and I said, wait a minute. My power contract expired 6 months ago. You didn't send me a letter, any notice, nothing. You said nothing to me. They said, oh, we don't do that. We don't notify you when your power bill has when your power contract has expired. It's up to you. Up to me. I'm supposed to put in my calendar. That happened to you? Went up 5 times? Really? That much? Yeah.
$543.
Because they put you on month to month.
When they put me on month to month. Went up to $543.
Yeah. So I said goodbye to that company. I said, I'm sorry. And what I decided is that the next company that I signed up with would have to do 2 things. Number one, they would have to be able to provide me with renewable energy, at least a plan that has some good amount of renewable power. That's first, at a competitive price. And two, they have to have a reminder system. They have to send me a letter saying, that your contract is coming up for expiration in a month, and if you don't renew it, you're going to go month to month. I found a company called Gexa, G-E-X-A. I'm not promoting them. In fact, I don't think I've even started with them yet. They haven't even switched over the power. But they at least met those 2 criteria. And so all of you listening out there, I advise you all to be careful about your power bill. You got to know when it's going to expire, and you got to be with a company. Steve's on the line. Does he have something to say about that? Let me put him on. No, he's off. What does Steve say?
What Steve had to say was that snow is white because it reflects all colors of the spectrum.
Snow is white because it reflects all colors of the spectrum. It seems to me that it reflects all colors of the spectrum because it's white. I mean, I appreciate what he's saying, but it seems to me the causality is reversed. But that's why. It's white because it reflects all colors of the spectrum. Yeah, that would be right. Thank you, Steve. There we go. Does Nancy have the same answer? Nancy's online. Huh? Nancy, you're on.
I would say it was just the opposite. It doesn't absorb any of the colors in the spectrum, but then what do I know?
It doesn't absorb any of the colors in the spectrum?
No. But I don't know anything about light.
Okay.
I did want to tell you, though, that I really love your introductory song, and I've never... to figure out where you got it.
Okay, I'm going to tell everybody what the song is.
Okay.
Thanks, Nancy.
Oh, that's not the only thing. That
okay.
Okay. The other thing is, I wanted to ask you on this pump. I wanted to applaud your efforts on the ecology and the recycling effort in Houston. I think it's marvelous, and I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
But the third thing, if you can touch on, I know it's not the subject of your show today, but I am so upset about the way the Congress is treating the automakers in Detroit. As opposed to how they treated the bank,
yeah,
the banking crisis, the financial crisis. They gave them $350 billion and didn't ask any questions. And
yeah.
Now these automakers have to come crawling on their hands and knees.
Yeah.
What is the hypocrisy there?
Okay, Nancy, let's hang up, and I'm going to make some comments on your issues, okay?
Thank you.
All right. First of all, the song, and I get a lot of emails on this. What's the song? What's the song? The song is called... La Luz Azul. That means the blue sky, which we have today. The sky is blue, and it's a mouthful. The name of the band, it's a Colombian band, which is a very popular, young, hip Colombian rock band from Colombia called Aterciopelados, which means something like rat velvet snakes. I don't know. Aterciopelados. That's the name of the band. Aterciopelados. Aterciopelados. Okay, so there it is. Nancy, you're right. The government, if I fault the government for one main thing, it's that the government has not driven a hard bargain with all of the companies. And I would like to see the government drive a business-like bargain with all of the companies. There is no reason that if the government is being looked to as the provider of capital to private enterprises, if that's who if the businesses have gone to the banks and they've gone to investors and they've gone to mutual funds and hedge funds, they've gone to all the big deep pockets of providers of capital, and those providers have said either we're not going to provide it on those terms, or we don't have enough to provide, you guys have dug too big a hole, and the only provider of capital left is the government, then the government should get terms that are commensurate with what private capital would get. I truly believe that. There's no reason on earth that should not be the case. You, the taxpayer, should be getting the same terms that Warren Buffett or J.P. Morgan or anyone else who would negotiate an arm's-length agreement to provide capital to banks or insurance companies or mortgage packagers like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And last, the automakers, although it probably won't be last. And so, Nancy, you're exactly right. It's not that I think they're playing too hard with the automakers, it's that they didn't play hardball enough with the other providers of capital, or with the other entities. I mean, look at Citigroup. $25 billion injection in capital. That was the original injection of capital. They got government got 5%. 5% preferred stock. A few weeks earlier, Warren Buffett, a private individual, had put $5 billion into Goldman Sachs and received 10%. Well, there it is. There is a private market transaction. And it's not that Citigroup drives a harder bargain than Goldman Sachs. I can tell you that. Goldman Sachs is known for being very tough and very smart. It's that the government agreed to less. And I don't know why that is. I really don't. I don't know if it's because Republicans are currently in charge of the government. Bob says yes, that's why. I don't know if it's because they have some philosophy that the goal here is not to endow the taxpayers with a business-like return potential. Or philosophically, they don't believe the government should own these entities. But look, if we're in 2008 and the way that things have gone in American business, the journey that American business has taken over the past 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades, whatever, the journey that they have taken has brought them to the point that they have bankrupted themselves, in effect. Hey! They bought their ticket and they took their ride. And look, I'm a shareholder. You know, I own index funds that are, you know, that have the, that are based on the S&P 500 that own shares in these companies. So, you know, on the one hand, I love it. Fine. The government is not driving a business-like deal with these companies. That helps me as a shareholder. But as a citizen, as a person of conscience, as a person who believes that fairness should prevail, you know, I'm sorry. I'd rather see the government receive a stake in the companies that is commensurate, similar to what any private entity, bank, individual, whatever, would receive. And it just so happens that if you inject $15 to $20 billion into General Motors or Chrysler or Ford at this point, you own the company. You own the company. You control the board of directors. You vote for the directors, and you can appoint management. So, I agree with you, Nancy. We'll see what happens. I don't know that these injections of capital are the last. My guess is that they're going to be the last. They're going to be the last, possibly during the Bush administration when Obama takes over. We'll see if the terms stiffen. They may not. Again, Obama is appointing advisors to these incredibly key positions. Incredibly key positions. Lisa Jackson is a New Jersey official. She's going to head the EPA. My gosh, I hope that Ms. Jackson is going to run the EPA the way the EPA is supposed to be run. My gosh. The EPA is the entity that is in control of emissions across this country, emissions that are coming out of power plants. So many of our power plants are based on coal. They consume and combust coal. The Bush administration did all it could to gut the rules on the upgrade of equipment on those coal plants. Rules that had been put in place 25 years before George W. Bush came into office, they did all they could to get rid of those rules and regulations. If we're going to burn coal, we have got to make sure that those plants have absolute state-of-the-art technology on them. To hold back and scrub SOx and NOx and mercury and everything. And CO2. And only when that equipment is put onto those power plants will you see the true cost of coal-fired power reflected in your bill as we get back to the issue of power bills. Yeah, right now wind and solar and so forth, they cost more. But if you were to include the cost of the pollution that comes out of coal, you would see a much closer price tag between those forms of energy. And it's crucial that these appointees by President Obama take steps to ensure that that happens over time. We will be watching very closely, and if they do not take those steps, we'll let them know. Nancy, I mentioned recycling. Here's an interesting article. Our friend Carrie Feibel at the Houston Chronicle reports that a team from Rice University wins $10,000 in the Recycle Ike contest. Why didn't they just call it the Recycle IKE contest? Anyway, a team of Rice scientists and students won a citywide contest here in Houston on Wednesday to devise a new way to recycle all of the tree debris left over from Hurricane Ike. Unbelievable amounts. I mean, right? Crazy, huge, you know, 4-foot diameter oak trees cut into slices. The winners, here's their idea. First of all, they accepted the money. It's good. They plan to use to build a research bioreactor on campus. The research bioreactor is a type of kiln. A kiln is an oven. To heat biomass from shredded trees to 400 to 500 degrees Celsius. That's hot. That will create biochar charcoal that can be sold for soil enrichment. One byproduct would be methane gas, which could be sold for energy production. The charcoal also could bring in revenue credits if President-elect Barack Obama institutes a cap-and-trade carbon market. The city could actually turn a profit by doing something like this, said team member Jeremy Caves, a senior majoring in earth science. A friend of mine, who I know, Dave, came to me recently and said we should be turning yard limbs and stuff into charcoal. And apparently that is the idea that the Rice students have, is to take all of the tree debris from Hurricane Ike and turn it into charcoal. The idea is far from the implementation stage. I would think it's going to take more than $10,000 to get there. And it's uncertain whether the process will be ready enough to incorporate any of the actual wood waste collected after Hurricane Ike. You want to hear the amount of wood waste collected? 5.2 million cubic yards. 5 million yards. I had some mulch delivered to my ranch the other day to make a playground. I had 40 yards, and it was a truckload full. It was an 18-wheeler truckload full, 40 yards. This is 5 million yards of waste. And then second place idea came from Al Weaver, a retired Shell chemical engineer. Al, a retired chemical engineer from Shell, says his idea was to put the wood waste into abandoned sand pits around Harris County, capping the waste with clay and soil and drawing off methane gas produced as the wood decays. These are sand pits. I think these are pits. Sand pits have developed as gravel has been mined out of these areas. It's created large pits. And Al's idea was to put the wood waste over these sand pits created when gravel was taken away and then covered over with clay. And the wood would rot, creating methane, which could then be taken away and used. Third place winner was 26-year-old Ian Ragsdale, another graduate of Rice University. He says use it as mulch and compost for mushroom growing beds in a system of urban farms around the city. So we would grow mushrooms. We would create mulch, but it's not just mulch. We would create mushroom-growing mulch beds all around the city for urban farms, and we would grow our own mushrooms. The farms would be learning centers for students and would grow food and distribute it to schools, food banks, and local restaurants. Three very interesting ideas for what to do with 5 million cubic yards of woody waste from Hurricane Ike. Okay, let's take a quick music break. When we come back, we'll take your calls. This is the New Capital Show, www.newcapitalshow.com. Back in a moment. welcome back. Thanks, Bob. I said I feel happy. I want some happy music, and you got it. You and Laura got it. Thank you. That's great. I hope everybody's happy today. I hope today the whole world has a happy day. Wouldn't that be great? That'd be great. Listener Mark writes in. He says, Leo, I had exactly the same experience with Green Mountain Power as you, with exactly the same result. He says, I'm also now a customer of JEXA since September with a two-year 100% wind plan. And Mark recommends that you might want to visit www.power2choose.org. This is a site that allows listeners to find their own electricity providers, and it sorts them. You know, provides a table. You can sort by price, or you can sort by renewable content. Mark, thank you. Power2choose.org. Power2choose.org. Another listener asked, the kiln idea, where does energy come from to get the kiln up to operating temperature? I don't know. I'll put the article up on our website after the show today. I'll put Kerry Feibel's article up, and anyone who's interested in contacting these teams can do it. But I think it's great that people are thinking about intellectual capital and what we do with all this wood capital, right? We've got all this 5 million cubic feet of wood capital. We need intellectual capital to figure out what to do with it. I think it's a great idea. And yes, Mark, Green Mountain, I mean, and Green Mountain, they called me when I left them to go to JEXA. And they said, how can we keep you? I said, well, number one, you can commit to notifying me that you're going to, that the contract's going to run out and that I need to renew an electric contract with you to lock in my rate. They said, well, we're going to start doing that soon. I said, but you're not doing that now. They said, no. I said, well, I'm sorry. They said, what else can we do? I said, well, you can credit me for the past 6 months of electricity where I've been paying month to month, as you can credit me as if I had been on a plan. They said, oh, no, I'm sorry. We can't do that. I said, goodbye. I'm out of here. 713-526-5738 is the number. Let's take Dave. Dave, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
All right. I can explain why snow is white.
Yeah.
But I'd rather know your opinion of how spying might affect the capital marketplace, you know, and why doesn't the government just save some money and sit in at the board meetings, you know? And maybe that justifies, you know, the government handing out the capital.
Spying.
Yeah, I mean, just really exploiting electronic communication so that you know what everybody's doing, what all the important people are doing.
You mean the way they did
the
way they did it with?
I'm saying I can't write a book. I can't finish writing a page without the whole world suddenly talking about the same thing.
Dave, you're saying we should have wiretaps on the Treasury Department?
I'm saying you don't have any privacy. I'm saying that you can't operate a corporation and with any privacy. So the government might as well loan you the capital and sitting on a board meeting. You know?
Uh-huh.
The government might as well be the investor.
Well, I think
you know, that's the way an observation. Now, I can explain why snow looks white.
Yeah, Dave.
You can't because you're in an imaginary, you have an imaginary business, you know, and you make up schemes like, I can buy my power from a windmill, you know, you know, only.
Dave, you have a fantastic, fantastic facility. Yeah. Facility
but,
and ability.
I can explain.
Wait.
You can't explain why government spying hurts the capital marketplace. And you'll say things like taxes might hurt the economy. You don't say it as often as other people. The taxes don't hurt the economy. Taxes stimulate the economy really fast. You know,
Dave. It's great.
Have a nice day.
It's great to have you. Thank you.
You left me on.
It it almost makes sense. It all. I mean, it's this far. He's this far, and in a way, it may. He may be there. He may see it clearly, and the rest of us, or at least I don't. But I just he's that far. Dave's incredible. Let's take Rick. Hey, Rick. Welcome to the New Capital Show. Rick, where are you? You're not there. Okay, next up is William. William, welcome. You're on the show.
Hi, Leo. This is Bill Eigel. I mean, this is William. I'm a longtime KPFT member, and you're talking about the energy companies. I have one I'd like to throw out there. About 4 days before the hurricane, I was out walking my dog, and I looked over at the bank of, the meters on the building, condos where I live, right?
Yeah.
And there was a guy from Centerpoint, and he was diligently working with the control school, which, see, I have friends that are electricians. I've worked as an electrician. I have a degree in electronic, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and he is adjusting the screw on each of the meters. And that's where you speed up the clock or slow down the clock. Now, do you think he was speeding it up or slowing it down?
William, so, Bill, do you think that, do you think that they are engaged in fraudulently?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. What I'm saying is okay, if you look at the kilowatt hours on your bill, right?
Yep.
Okay, ever since the hurricane hit, Our weather has been extremely mild, so hardly anybody's been using their air, hardly anybody's been using a lot of electricity, and yet my bill, and I'll bet almost everybody else's bill that's listening, has been the same kilowatt.
Yeah, mine was huge. I was very surprised.
It should be about at least a third less, right? And yet it's the same, so multiply that out. Okay, so now this is the process you have to go through, right? If you want to report about something like an issue like what I'm talking about, you can call Centerpoint where they will charge you to come out and say, no, nothing's wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the second issue way you can go, and I'm pretty sure you know who I am. I'm the guy that makes Christmas cards every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what the deal is you can call, like, say, our local investigative group at the local corporate television show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which Centerpoint and these energy companies are one of the last few remaining, you can count on major advertisers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how deep are they going to go into it?
So you feel like it's just a wholesale effort to...
The only way it's going to be solved is if we have an independent group of people that can go out and randomly go around and check a bunch of meters and say, hey, guess what? All these meters have been sped up.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I have friends that can come over and slow down my meter for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would be illegal.
Bill, thanks for the call. Great to have you.
Bye.
I'm over at Power to Choose. Yeah, I did. I signed up with Jex at 15 cents for a year, and prices are now down around 12 and 13 cents, much lower than they were. Bob says, I had Jexa, and you were paying under 15 cents. Contract ran out, went to 21 cents. They tell me that they're sending notices now. That's what they say. In fact, I think that this is becoming a major competitive issue in the power market in Houston. Those companies that give you notice that your contract is going to expire and you are going to go month to month on your electricity, and those that don't. But for all listeners out there, all I can do is urge you to call your power company and tell them that you demand a courtesy letter 1 or 2 months before your power contract is to expire. Maybe that should be our next petition. There should be regulation in the city of Houston or in the state of Texas that any power provider must provide courtesy notification that their contract is due to expire. What do you all think about that? Our last petition got the city of Houston moving on recycling. We still need to pick that up in the wake of the hurricane. Maybe that'll be our next petition. No power provider should be able to just dump you month to month with no notice. Who knows? Let's take Joe. Next up is Joe. Hey.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. Welcome to the New Capital Show, Joe.
You just gave me another piece of fodder for the cannon. As long as Rick Perry's governor of Texas and the legislature is configured like it is, getting something that regulates power companies has got a snowball's chance in hell.
Right. I mean, Joe, it's crazy. It almost feels hopeless. But maybe there's a way to do it. Maybe if we get enough people on board, we can get put into the law, the energy provision laws of the state of Texas, that you must provide courtesy notice 1 month before the expiration of the contract.
I agree. It makes absolute sense. There's absolutely no reason for them not to do it.
Have you had that experience where they've thrown you?
No, actually, I've got Green Mountain. I went to a yearly contract, so it was nice to hear that that they're going to pull the switcheroo somewhere about midsummer on me, I think, and put me on to month to month. So I'll be watching. Matter of fact, I'm probably going to call them today and say, when does my contract expire?
Why don't you call them and tell them that you are a customer and you demand a courtesy notice?
I'll do that. And then there was two other things that sort of triggered some interest. One was you're obviously talking about the environment, and you spoke about clean coal. And from what I've understood, listening to some of the people, actually some of the people I think that even been on KPFT, that clean coal is sort of a mythology that's been born by the coal industry themselves, and it's kind of like a unicorn. It really doesn't exist in the state that they can apply it now. So I think it's just rubbish. I might be wrong, but I think it's clean coal is just a red herring. It's a way to get permits started on coal plants with the promise that they're going to clean up their act later on.
Joe, thanks for the call.
And one last thing.
Uh-huh.
The reason that they're balking at bailing out the motor companies was stated pretty succinctly by a senator from North Carolina. I can't remember his name. But basically, they want to tank the unions. So this is their way of union busting. This is leftover Reaganite malarkey, and that's what they're going to pull.
Yeah. Joe, thanks for the call. Certainly. Great to have you. First on coal. I'm not saying that coal will ever be clean or as clean as other things, but there are technologies that are available to make coal plants cleaner than they are. And the effort by the Bush administration has been to gut what's called the New Source Review Laws. The New Source Review Laws were put into place to make sure that any coal plant that undertook upgrades, extensive upgrades, over a certain threshold, that the coal plants couldn't just do part of the upgrade. That if they began to upgrade the plant, if they made any kind of major modifications to the plant, they had to go whole hog, and they had to put all of the new good technology in that can eliminate and scrub some of the pollutants, if not most of the pollutants. Now, we're not talking about carbon dioxide. I'm talking about sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide and mercury and these things. And what the Bush administration has tried to do is to eliminate the requirement that those upgrades get done. So I did not say clean coal, and I'm not saying coal's clean. I do expect that coal plants are here to stay for a lot longer. But that, in my opinion, the laws that were on the books that forced the plants to upgrade should be upheld, and that the Obama administration should without a doubt make sure that New Source Review laws are enforced. On the car companies, I have no doubt that there are those who wish to bust the auto union. I have no doubt that there are those who wish to do that. I think, though, that there are also those who don't have that desire. And so you've got all sorts of dueling interests at work on the car companies. To me, to me, the bottom line is that it's not a union issue at this point. Providing of the capital should be done on a business-like basis by the government. And then the government will be in a position of having to deal with the union, because the government will effectively control the companies. And in my opinion, if the government is putting up the capital on the terms that are business-like, the government would come to be basically in control of the car companies, as it is right now in control of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and is tacitly in control of AIG, controlling 89% of the common stock. So we've had nationalization of these companies, not through any kind of philosophy that's been promulgated to nationalize the companies, but by the sheer mismanagement of American business. And that mismanagement should not be rewarded by allowing shareholders to remain in place. Much as I have a personal interest through my ownership of stocks, philosophically, I wouldn't be consistent if I didn't say that if the government is going to put the capital in, the government should control the companies. And if the government turns around the companies, the government can always sell the stock back to private investors. Private investors have not stepped up and are not stepping up to take on these risks. If there comes a time when the government's capital turns around the companies and the companies become profitable again and well run, private investors will have the opportunity to repurchase common stock in the companies, and the government should profit from that. Next up, let's take Tom. Tom, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Merry Christmas. I'm doing fine. You know, I've been listening to you, and the other time you made a very brilliant argument about car companies rating their fuel efficiency in MPG as opposed to gallons per miles.
Yes.
But then that's another up for another discussion. The reason why I called you today was the city of Chicago has actually leased out their parking spot to Morgan Stanley for $1.16 billion for reportedly a 75-year lease, which in turn now allows the private companies to more than double their parking rates over 5 years.
Wait a minute. Tom, I haven't seen this. What you're saying is that Morgan Stanley has entered into a deal with the city of Chicago. Presumably, Morgan Stanley has paid Chicago a lump sum amount of money.
Right.
This is what I'm guessing, if this is the deal. Chicago has a budget shortfall. It needs a lump sum amount of money, and therefore has sold off the annuity rights, as it were, to the parking spaces. And Morgan Stanley then will receive the revenue over the 75 years in return for a lump sum payment to the city of Chicago now.
Exactly. Now, they also last year leased out Midway Airport for 99 years in exchange for $2.52 billion. This is all happening, and I want everybody to realize that all other cities around the country are looking at Chicago's example. And if the city of Houston sees that to be the next viable option to balance their shortfalls, guess what? All these traffic light cameras you're seeing, they're going to be on another Wells Fargo bank.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, there's no free lunch. Cities either have to raise taxes, and I can tell you that my property taxes have gone up 50% in the past decade, if not more. And I'm not sure how much higher I want them to go. I mean, all I'm saying is the country faces choices. And when I say the country, I don't just mean the country. I mean the cities and the states. And we are all going to have to make a decision as to which projects are worth financing.
But what happens in the example that Morgan Stanley goes under? What happens in that situation? You've already sold your parking spot. You've already sold your city properties to all these corporations. Then what happens?
Yeah. Well, in any bankruptcy, assets are going to be transferred. So I'm not concerned that parking spaces are going to go away. There will always be somebody who is interested in owning the parking space asset. And so I don't know anything about this deal, but if your point, the main point should be that our cities and our states are strapped for cash. There are estimates that the state of California is going to be out of money in March, which is coming upon us pretty soon. And we are strapped financially in this country across a broad range of our institutions. Personally, okay. Our individuals, our institutions within our communities, schools and so forth, our cities themselves, our states, the country, and this is the result, in my opinion, not because there's a lack of credit, but because investments have not been good over the past 20 to 30 years. We've thrown a lot of money, good money, at bad projects, Tom. Thanks for the call. Great to have you. Let's take Rick on line two. Rick, welcome to the show.
Yeah, can you hear me first?
Yep.
Yeah, first I wanted to talk about the agreement on energy and then the Detroit Auto bailout. And the first was I'm a subscriber to Green Mountain Energy too, and they hit me too. When I looked at my bill for November, I was surprised that it was $290. I was really expecting it to be around $100.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I looked at the kilowatt hour rate, and it was 18 cents an hour. And I was like, "What the hey is this?"
Mine was my effective rate was 20 cents. So what did you do?
Well, I stupidly went on the one-year plan there. I wish I had done what you had done and just, you know, shopped around, which is, you know, what I should have done.
Yeah.
But I realized I didn't think I would get lower than 15 cents a kilowatt hour, so I just re-upped just out of sheer, I don't have the time to look this up right now.
Yeah. But, well, you know what you can do, Rick? You should call them. Tell them you want to speak to a supervisor and tell them that this is your last contract with them if they do not give courtesy notice of the expiration of the contract.
Yeah, and I, you know, when you mentioned GEXA, my son does a little league in spring with, you know, this is a program for autistic kids, and I saw that GEXA was one of the sponsors. I don't want to plug GEXA. This show isn't about plugging products.
No,
listen, all
I'm doing is relating my experience, who I used and who I've gone to. And I'm telling everybody, I don't think I've had GEXA for a week now. So I can't tell you they're good or bad. All I can tell you is they told me that they would give me courtesy notice, and they had an alternative energy plan. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
I could have a terrible experience.
Yeah,
but,
I also
but,
think what I'll do is I'll check with the state attorney general's office to see if, you know, just to check all the companies to see how many complaints have been lodged against any of them and go from there.
And tell Green Mountain this is it. This is your last contract unless they give you notice.
Definitely. Oh, and the other thing is the Detroit auto bailout. You know, Brian Ross, ABC News reporter, did a special on how the Wall Street financiers were basically buying both parties, Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought at that time, that's very interesting. They want something for that. And I got my answer in September. The thing is that when Detroit came around, well, the greeting wasn't as, you know, as welcoming. And I think, yeah, definitely, there's definitely more favor for big finance than for big auto manufacturing, and there's a lot of competing issues at work here. Primarily was, I think, money.
Yeah.
Secondly, there's a big desire on the part of a particular party to break the UAW. No question about that.
No question. I'm sure that's
and
true.
It is high on the agenda, and it would just be completing, you know, what Reagan started out to do with the PATCO controllers.
Yeah.
And then finally, let's put blame where it is. I mean, Detroit got itself in this situation by killing the electric vehicles, the EV1, and the Partnership for a New Generation of Vehicles. You know, GM had the Prelude, which got 80 miles to the gallon. Ford had the, I remember what the name of their car is. It got 72 miles to the gallon. And Chrysler had the ESX3, and that also got 72 miles to the gallon. And interestingly, Toyota and Honda, scared of what Detroit would do, because they were not allowed in the Partnership for a New Generation of Vehicle program that Clinton started, got very afraid and built the Prius in the case of Toyota, and the Insight in the case of Honda. Honda's Insight got 70 miles to the gallon highway, 62 city, and Toyota's first generation Prius got something like 45 highway and 48 city.
Yep. Rick, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Great to have you.
Sure.
We've only got about three, 4 minutes left here. You know, one of the first things Rick Wagner did when he took over as the CEO of General Motors was he acquired Hummer. He acquired Hummer. He decided what General Motors needed back in, 2001 or two was a massive gas-guzzling military-like vehicle. Let's think back to those days when and people bought those things. People bought those things, and at a time when our country had experienced a terrorist attack that, in my opinion, is rooted in our involvement in oil-producing countries in the Middle East. Our leaders did not draw the link for us explicitly that we have geopolitical problems in oil-producing countries. And GM, Rick Wagner, thought he had a winner. Oh, I'm going to go buy Hummer. Now he's got something that's absolutely, totally worthless. Worthless. A total destruction of shareholder capital. Now, I'm not going to sit here and the way for us all not to engage in political debates about this should be bailed out and that shouldn't be bailed out is just to say, fine, we'll bail out American business. But you know what? We are going to drive a business-like bargain. You want our capital? We'll provide the capital. We own the company. We, the people, the government, owns the company. We'll put in place whatever trusteeship structure we need to have. We'll do whatever we need to do to, make a proper structure so that influence cannot be peddled through government ownership. But you know what? American business has done what it's done. We're providing the capital. We own the business. We control the business. Hopefully we'll run it right. Yes, absolutely. But we are the ones providing the capital. And that way we don't sit here, is it right? Is it moral? Is it not? Are we trying to bust unions? Da, da, da. Look, here's the capital. Fine. The government's got it. And believe me, the government's got the money. People all over the world are pouring money into U.S. treasuries. This is the right time for the U.S. government to help industries. But we own the business. Sorry. The shareholders are wiped out. The bondholders can stay, but they are going to take a junior position to the new capital coming in. The government capital has seniority to the existing bondholders. And that's it. That's how business works. That's how we capitalists work. And if you are able to be capitalist during good times in your business, then you have to be capitalist during bad times. If we have a capitalist society, then the government is a provider, and the government is a provider of capital, then the government owns the business. Sorry. If you don't like those terms, go find somebody else. And the answer is, they can't find anybody else. www.newcapitalshow.com. I hope you all enjoy this really wonderful, crisp, winter weather. We'll be back 1 week. Until then, take care. Hope you have a great week.
To a discourse and dinner with Himalayan monk Swami Vijayashananda Giri. You won't want to miss this free and unforgettable evening of inspirational discourse entitled Roots of Vedic Antiquity and Its Last Vestiges. Swami Vijayashananda Giri lucidly disseminates the authentic teachings of the Himalayan masters. His mission is to reconnect a global humanity with its most ancient and precious heritage hidden in its timeless Sanskrit wisdom tradition from which sprouts human knowledge, whether spiritual or secular. Remember, in this season of joy, Swami Vijayashananda Giri of the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship will be offering a free inspirational discourse and dinner at the brand new India House located at 8888 West Belfort on Saturday, December 13th at 6 p.m. For more information, please visit www.yoga4peace.org.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.